You're listening to the City Gospel Movement's podcast, where we celebrate and accelerate collaborative gospel work in cities around the world.
We believe God is already at work in your city. We're here to help you ask, what is God doing where I live, and how can I join in?
If you love your city, love the church, and believe God can do amazing things in your city, you're in the right place.
Let's get started.
I think when I was sharing the four spiritual laws, I felt like I had this agenda. And I think that agenda really keeps a lot of millennials from wanting to participate in evangelism.
I agree.
City Gospel Movement's podcast family. That is a mouthful, but I just want to thank you for listening and remind you to subscribe. That is the best way that you will be in touch with our latest resources, and we have some really exciting content planned for the end of the year and also for 2020, and podcasts don't magically expand. It really is a group effort with awesome listeners and the team who creates a podcast, and so we would love for you to subscribe and really let us know what you're thinking of the podcast, which is why I'm excited for you all to hear from Caden House. Caden, you lead our communications team and want to let our listeners know of a couple important details.
Yeah, well, team is a generous word considering I'm one person, but yeah, we love having this conversation off the podcast and continuing it, and we want to hear from you, our listeners. And so I'm really behind the scenes a lot of times, but I have those conversations through social media and through our emails, and we want to continue having them. So please, please DM us. You can find us on Instagram. Our name is City Gospel Movements, no spaces. Just DM us, please. We want to have this conversation, and we want to continue hearing from you and what you want to hear even on this podcast.
Well, I am so excited to have Josh Chen on the City Gospel Movement's podcast today. Josh Chen has become a friend of the Palau team over the years, and he is a dreamer and a storyteller. He finds the story that God invites us into captivating, and he is passionate about inviting others into that story. He has been on staff with Crew for over 15 years, so has quite a lot of stories I think he could share with us. And the first 10, he served with Epic, which was Crew's ministry focused on reaching Asian Americans. And now he leads a team with his wife, Wendy, in Portland, and they are specifically focused on better understanding the deeper questions of millennials and how to explain the gospel in a way that resonates with them. He studied computer science at Eastern Washington University, and him and Wendy have three beautiful kids. Josh, it's great to have you on the podcast today.
Yeah, it's great to be here today.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. Hey, well, in conversations we had even last week, I remember you saying you were a bad youth group kid. So how did a bad youth group kid end up working for Crew?
Well, you know, funny enough, I was a youth group president, but on the side, I was getting in fights. I was kind of a troublemaker, kind of an outcast in the in the Chinese community. And my sister was a missionary when I graduated and from high school, and I told her, I don't think this Christian thing is for me anymore. And I walked away from my faith. And about my sophomore year, I just had this experience where I was longing for something more. Yeah, I just realized that my identity was caught up in so many of these things that were really stripped away from me. And I sensed God kind of pursuing me. And I had this experience where I tested God, and he really showed up in significant ways. And so I was like, you know what? This is a God that I want to follow. And so, yeah.
What did some of that testing look like in that season?
Yeah, it was kind of bizarre. I was driving along the road, kind of like this 5-hour road trip, and there was no radio stations, so I was kind of getting bored. Like, I was in the middle of nowhere. There was, you know, it's the end of winter. There's still snow on the ground in Eastern Washington, and I start praying, God, if you're real, show me something. Like, show me that you're real. And I close my eyes and I see these numbers flash in front of my eyes. And the numbers are 93.3. And so I'm thinking to myself, oh, maybe that's a radio station. So I turn on my radio, knowing full well that my radio, like the reason I was praying because I was bored and the radio stations had gone out. I couldn't even find anything. I hit seek and it goes all the way through all the numbers past 93.3 and all the way to the end. And I was thinking, what a fluke. And so without me realizing, it starts all over again and it lands on 93.3 and it's a song. And the lyrics are, I want to be your hands, I want to be your feet, I'll go where you send me. And it's this Christian guy singing to God about following God. And then at the, it's the very beginning of that song. And then at the end of the song, it just, it's just static again.
Man.
And so, yeah, you know, like I have a kind of a computer science mind and I'm like, okay, I just passed some mountains and I'm just kind of reasoning it away. Like, okay, maybe the wavelengths are just bouncing just right. And so I test God again and I go, okay, God, this is what I want you to do. I want you to put a car on the side of the road. I want you to have someone standing outside the driver's side door and I want you to have him wave me down. And so
this is just random.
Super random. Super random.
You're like, okay, God, you did that. Okay, second test.
Yeah, yeah. And I just wanted, you know, I said, God, let me serve you by serving somebody else. Super random. And honestly, I was kind of hoping that nothing would happen because then I would have to change my life. And so I'm driving down the road and it's like midnight in the middle of nowhere. I hadn't seen a car for like an hour. And about 5 minutes later, I see these little tiny yellow flashing lights. And I'm like, no way. So I turn on my brights, I get close, and there's nobody there. And the closer I get, the more I realize, okay, there's nobody there. And then I drive past the car, and I look outside my passenger side window, and I see just a hand fly up. And I'm like, there's no way there was anybody there. And I'm, you know, it takes me some time to slow down and pull over to the side. So by the time I'm stopped, I'm like way past the car and I'm thinking to myself, there was nobody there. And I'm freaking out because I'm like, that was a ghost. And I say this quick prayer to God. I say, God, if that's a ghost back there and he kills me, my blood is on your hands and you better let me into heaven. So that was my prayer. I back up and I hop out of the car and sure enough, there's this man standing outside this car. He's wearing a black leather jacket, black jeans, and he's up against a black van. And that's why I can see him. Mm-hmm. And he tells me, you know, my pregnant wife and my 3-year-old daughter are in the back of the van freezing to death, literally. We've been out here for 3 hours. And he opens the van and they're violently shaking because of the cold. And I tell him, like, I'm like, I don't know anything about cars, but you guys, you and your family can hop into my car. My dorm's about an hour and a half away. You could stay with me for as long as you like. And so,
wow.
So yeah, I took this family back to my dorm. They stayed with me. And one thing that he said to me kind of woke me up. He says, you know, I don't know if there's a God or not. This is out of the blue. Like I didn't say anything about this. He says, I don't know if there's a God or not, but I know this. If you're ever in a situation like I was in, God will send an angel to help you as he did to help me. And for me, everything that I had prayed before this, all the radio station, all that stuff I had forgotten about in the moment, and it brought all that back, and it was almost like a movie where you like see all the things that had led up to that point, and I'm like, oh my gosh, God orchestrated all these events so that I could meet his prayers and he could meet my prayers. So yeah, that was the moment where I started really, truly, seriously following Christ.
Wow. What a story. What a story. And, you know, I think it's so interesting, like you said, when God gives you the eyes to start seeing and connecting the dots that he's been writing throughout your life, and you're realizing, wow, this God has been pursuing me the whole time.
Yeah.
So tell me then, so you start working with Crew, and what is it like interacting with college students and, you know, you're following Jesus, you're committed to him, and you're interacting with students who maybe have been on the fence like you were, maybe aren't aware of Jesus. Tell us kind of what those first years were like.
Yeah. You know, I interned here in Portland, Oregon, and I spent those first 3 years starting new ministries. There weren't any Asian American ministries at the time in Oregon with Crew. And so, yeah, my assignment was to start new ones. And so in the midst of doing that, my job was to identify leaders that were passionate and to mobilize them, to train and mobilize them and coach them. And so that's really what I did. I found these incredible leaders throughout Oregon at University of Oregon, Portland State, Oregon State University. And these leaders are really the ones that worked with the college students. You know, I would come in and coach them and speak and train on evangelism, but they were really the ones that were doing the heavy lifting.
Yeah, and that's what we've seen. It's really the students are the ones who have the influence to reach their other peers. So you worked with them for a few years, and then when it came to evangelism, I'm just curious, you know, because we know Crew as the four spiritual laws, yep. Mm-hmm. And, you know, doing surveys and asking people, do you want to know more about God? You know, different things like that. So you are very exposed, you know, to that type of thinking.
Absolutely.
And what was it like for you at first when you were kind of living in that flow of sharing the gospel in that way?
Yeah. To go back to my story previous, I signed up for a summer missions trip. And in order to train for this mission trip, I had to read the four spiritual laws. And I think they had changed it to the Knowing God Personally booklet. And so I'm reading through it. And I grew up in church. And I realized, I was like, this is the gospel? How come I've never heard this in the church growing up? At least I've heard pieces of it sprinkled throughout, but it never was put together in a cohesive way like this. And so I was like, this is amazing. Like, I understand this. And I would probably say that I started following Jesus like cognitively at that point. I mean, before that, I really didn't know what I was pursuing besides God, right?
You know, that's so interesting. We just had Greg Steer from Dare to Share here last week. And he said, you know, he trains and mobilizes and equips teens around the country to share their faith. Mm-hmm. But he's like, if you were to do the mic test and put a mic up to all these teens' faces and said, and ask them, what is the gospel? You would get so many different answers.
Yep.
And so my question for you is, what is that balance between training somebody to know what the gospel is and then encouraging them to share the gospel in their own way rather than just like a templated rote way? Does that make sense?
That's a great question. And, you know, I think it's Tim Keller that says the gospel is not just the ABCs, but it's the A to the Z. And I think for tools like the Knowing God Personally booklet, the Four Spiritual Laws, it's like we, you know, a way simplified the message to the ABCs. And so it's like an entry point. And really, that way of sharing the gospel works with very specific people. People with a church background, people that grew up like really wrestling with guilt. And so, like, as we talk about the grace of God, that's like amazing news to them. But the problem comes when people start to believe that that is the fullness of the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
And they stay there. Their entire Christian lives, they stay in the ABCs. But I think God's calling us into a fuller understanding of the gospel, the A to the Z. And as we do that, we find that different aspects of this robust gospel resonates with different people.
Mm-hmm. That's great. You know, one thing that we were so encouraged to hear a couple weeks ago when you spoke at chapel for our Palau team was that you decided a handful of years ago to do a deep dive study on millennials. You wanted to understand millennials and you wanted to understand what are the questions they're asking when it comes to life and God and, you know, these big questions. So can you help us understand why did you decide to do that study? And then maybe what surprised you about what you found out?
Yeah. You know, 10 years of doing campus ministry, you see some trends. You know, I did some time in Portland. I spent some time in Austin, Texas. I spent some time in Eastern Washington, really sharing the gospel the same way over and over and over again. And over a period of time, you begin to see that it works with some people and that group of people was shrinking. The types of people that existed that really resonated with the four spiritual laws was shrinking. And so convinced in my heart that the gospel is good news to every human being, I was like, man, we need to figure out what it looks like to share the gospel with the millennial generation and Gen Z. the other thing was that a lot of our grads were graduating, and you know, I'd ask them like, hey, what does ministry look like after college? And they're like, I have no clue. And I just realized, man, we are not preparing our college grads for ministry in the real world. None of them, very few of them will actually pull out, you know, a booklet to share the gospel. And so I needed to figure out a way to share the gospel that worked in both the you know, the working world, but in your neighborhoods. And I had never really done that before. Like I graduated from college, went straight into ministry. And as a result, I never had to wrestle through what that looked like. And so, you know, 6 years ago, I started to figure out, what does that look like? What does that look like to share the gospel in different contexts? And, you know, I would do crazy things like sign up to be an extra on TV shows so that I could, yet, you know, emulate a workplace environment because I'm in full-time ministry, you know? And then I would have conversations with all sorts of people, and I'd really learn, okay, here's how you talk in a way that's salty, you know, like not in the millennial way of talking about salty, like angry, but like salty, like it makes people thirsty and wanting more from what you're saying.
Interesting. Interesting. So through that study, I know that you found out a few things about, was it five different things that if you kind of model these, you know, if you talk normally, if you you do these things, people actually are pretty receptive to talk about Jesus. What are some of those things that you found?
Crew City did a huge study on this, and they found some pretty significant information. I think living in a city like Portland or, you know, more progressive cities, our assumption is that people don't want to talk about Jesus. And so we go in kind of apologetic as we start these spiritual conversations. But in the study that studied across gender, socioeconomic, political spectrums, it was diverse in every aspect. What they found was that 84% of people are willing to have a conversation about Jesus if we have certain postures. Postures like being empathetic towards their story, like putting ourselves in their own shoes. Things like talking like a real human being. Like a lot of times we just have so much Christian jargon that what we're trying to communicate doesn't make any sense to the person. Things like creating a better story for their lives. You know, a lot of people or everybody, every human being on earth is trying to figure out what narrative fits their life. And they're pursuing things that fit that narrative. And what ends up happening is they find life where there is no life. And really what we can come in and say is, hey, there's a better story. And the story that we're inviting you into, it causes you to live out of who you're created to be and to flourish as a human being. Yeah, and so there's just some ways that, you know, finding common ground. These types of things that we naturally do in regular conversation, somehow when we enter into evangelism, we just throw out the window. And I don't know why. Yeah.
And I think it's because a lot of people my age, you know, 20s, 30s, feel very awkward, maybe wary about evangelism. But I think I want to backtrack a little bit. You know, you were saying with the four spiritual laws that the group was shrinking that was receptive to that style of gospel sharing, gospel conversations, and evangelism. And then when you did this study, you realized, wait, what if it was more story-based? Or what if it was maybe even coming from a posture of listening to their story first?
Yeah.
So how did the way you shared the gospel now change because of those years of learning and research and having conversations affect?
Yeah. Well, my research started out with this hypothesis that I think millennials are asking questions that Christians are no longer answering. We're really trying to package what our message of the gospel in a way that resonated really well with baby boomers. And so I spent a lot of time trying to figure out what are the questions that we are trying to answer as the church. And what are the questions that millennials are asking? And what I found was that what we fundamentally are trying to answer are questions like, how do I get to heaven and what do I do with my guilt? And as I tested that amongst millennials, they just did not care about those things. Heaven was so far outside their realm of thought that, like, they just shrugged. You know, they no care. Not even the Christians really cared all that much. And then guilt, I found, was not a huge issue anymore. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. And so I really wanted to dial it into what are the questions that they're asking. And really the questions that they were asking had to do with, what does it mean for me to thrive as a human being? And what does it mean for humanity to flourish? And so I went back to scripture. I spent 2 years in the book of Matthew, and I just tried to answer the question, what is the narrative? How does Jesus answer these questions? And I tried to strip away every bias that I had going into reading the scripture, which is virtually impossible. But I tried, from building my foundation from the ground up, recreating a theological structure that made sense in answering those questions. Answering questions like, what is sin? What is salvation? What is faith? What is repentance? What is the problem of this, you know, the storyline? What is the climax? What is, you know, like, kind of recreating all of those elements to better fully understand how does Jesus answer those questions. And what I found was that Jesus answered those questions and pursued answering those questions probably even more so than the questions of heaven and guilt. And so that was one piece of the research that was really enlightening to me. The second piece was that I started to believe that millennials are and Gen Zers are shifting away from a guilt and innocence culture towards a shame and honor culture.
Mm-hmm.
Missiologists talk about that there's really three worldviews, these frameworks to how we see the world. There's guilt and innocence, there's shame and honor, and then there's fear and power. And traditionally, Western cultures are guilt and innocence. Eastern cultures are shame and honor. And, you know, tribal cultures are fear and power. As I started diving in and realizing, okay, they're not asking these questions of guilt, there was this kind of moment that I had, is this aha moment when, mm-hmm, I was listening to my wife speak. You know, we spent 10 years in Asian American ministry sharing the gospel in light of shame and honor, because that's the language that resonates with Asian Americans. And I'm hearing her speak in front of 1,000 college students sharing the gospel in light of shame and honor. And all these staff and students are coming to her and saying, you're putting language to things I've felt all my life, but I never had words to communicate. And so I kind of got this, like, okay, something's happening culturally. I think there's something significant happening. So I decided to test this theory, and I came up with these three statements to reflect each of those worldviews. The first one is guilt and innocence, and the statement was something along the lines of Jesus Christ paid the penalty for my sin, allowing me access to heaven. The second one was Jesus Christ frees me from my shame and allows me to be who I was created to be. And the third one is Jesus Christ defeats the principalities of this world, freeing it from its demonic oppression. And as I tested this group of people, what I found was that 11 raised their hand for the first one, which is guilt and innocence. 21 raised their hand for shame and honor. And 6 raised their hand for fear and power. And the more I did this test in different groups, the more, like, it showed, like, okay, this is consistent. And so I think we're moving from a guilt and innocence framework to a shame and honor. And our language and our understanding of the gospel needs to reflect that.
Yeah, you know, I think that's so interesting, because while there is more of the shame and honor kind of culture amongst millennials, mm-hmm, even that test showed, while that may be the primary narrative we need to be speaking the gospel into, we also need to be aware of how to communicate the gospel to all three, quite honestly,
yeah,
right?
Uh-huh.
And I think, uh-huh, I think for one thing that Jesus was so masterful at is that he was able to do that. He could dance,
yes,
between talking to people. He could see, oh, you see God this way, or you see sin this way, or,
mm-hmm,
maybe you see meaning and flourishing this way. Actually, let me show you a different way,
yeah,
you know?
Uh-huh.
And so I guess my question for you is, how would you encourage people, leaders who, you know, a lot of the leaders we work with are having to navigate between different sectors of society. They mm-hmm. may have one meeting with the business leader in the morning, they have another meeting with the superintendent, and then they may have, you know, a pastor's dinner they're going to that night, you know? So how do you encourage leaders who need to be working in multi-sectors, they need to be multilingual in some sense, to be growing in their ability to communicate the gospel in a multifaceted way?
Yeah, it's a great question. That's a heavy question. Yeah, I'm convinced that the gospel answers the question of every human heart. And everyone has different longings. Like the way that I long for certain things is different than my parents and is different than somebody in Russia. Like we're different human beings with different longings, and we have to understand, what is the person sitting across from me longing for, and how does the gospel answer that better mm-hmm. than the mm-hmm. narrative that they're finding themselves in, mm-hmm. better than where they're finding life where there is no life? And so that's kind of how I think about it. And the hard part of that is that it's hard for me to communicate what the good news is to that person if I haven't experienced the good news in a similar way in my own heart. Mm-hmm. And so kind of how I think about figuring out what those longings are is through what, you know, we call it a sin tree. And this tree is like, you know, a tree with roots, with a trunk, with branches, and with fruit. And so what you do is you look at the fruit and you trace it back. And so if the fruit is kind of your symptom, like your behavior, your thought patterns, which really is not the problem. The problem, it goes much deeper. And so the branches are where you find life where there is no life. The trunk are the lies that you believe in, and the roots are what you worship. Mm-hmm. And so the deeper down you can get into this tree, the more you can make it whole again. And so if somebody is sharing, like I remember this one gal was sharing with me, man, I'm so stressed out at work. And so the fruit is the stress. And I'm like, man, I feel for you. 6 months ago, I was totally stressed out. And at that point, the gospel had worked in my life to free me from a lot of anxiety. And so she says, 6 months ago, I'm always stressed at work. Did your job get easier? I'm like, no, it actually got harder. And she's like, well, what happened then? I go, honestly, it was a Bible verse that I read. And as I was reading this Bible verse, it changed my perspective on everything. And she's like, well, what was the Bible verse? And I said, well, it's this verse that says, but God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. And I told her what I extrapolated out of that passage is this idea that I'm inherently valuable, that God demonstrates, you can almost translate it, God demonstrates his own value towards us in this. Mm-hmm. While we had nothing to offer, Jesus Christ became the God-man in order to pursue us to the point of death. And as I started to believe that I was inherently valuable, I started to question, well, why do I care so much of what other people think of me, of how I do my job, of when I speak, like how well I speak, you know? And I realized as my mind started to shift away from believing that my value came from something external for myself, that to believing that I'm inherently valuable because I reflect the Imago Dei, that my anxiety just melted away. And she was like, that's amazing. And a few months later, I overhear her talking to her friend, and she's like, man, I had so much stress at work, and then Josh told me this thing, and all my stress just kind of melted away. And so the lie that she believed was that her value came from something external from herself, just like me. And though our fruit probably looked completely different, like the way that we coped with our stress, like I might have binge-watched Netflix, whereas she, you know, I don't know, would numb her pain with alcohol or something like that. I don't think she did. But, you know, like the fruit looked completely different. The root and the lies were the same. Mm-hmm. And so allowing the gospel to deal with us at such a deep level, we're able to then see how people are finding life in some of those things in similar ways and speak that into their life.
Yeah, yeah. And I love, you know, one of the things that you've talked to me and then our team about is that, you know, as we even look at the way Jesus interacted with other people,
yeah,
we can begin to not only see how he speaks to the deepest part of other people's souls, but speaks to the deepest part of our soul, mm-hmm. so that when we're around other people who may not know Jesus, who are kind of on the fence, we're able to draw from our own experience, our personal experience mm-hmm. of the gospel, and say, hey, you know, I was stressed, but this is how Jesus met me in that. Or I was mourning, and this is how Jesus met me in that. Or I was really struggling with this, you know, addiction, and this is how Jesus met me there. So, I think... personally experience the gospel and continually allowing Jesus the space to widen our understanding and deepen our understanding of the gospel only empowers us more to share more personally and empowered by the Spirit when it does come to meeting people where they're at.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of times we think about our testimony as like these, like we have this conversion testimony and that we need to share that conversion testimony. But if we're honest with ourselves, that conversion testimony spoke to our deepest longings and therefore is good news to us. But it's not necessarily what would resonate with the person that we're talking to. And that's why we need to develop more than just our conversion testimony. We need to develop these micro testimonies that throughout our life, as we experience the gospel breaking through into our lives and transforming the lies that we believe in, the things that we find life in where there is no life, and the fruit in our lives, that we're then able to continually be transformed and share those micro testimonies with people that are longing for that exact same experience.
Yeah, I love that phrase, micro testimony, because I think it even encourages people to look at their daily life and just seek to see, okay, God, where are you at work?
Yep.
Where are you moving? And how can I just verbalize that to people that I'm around? So, no, that's great. Hey, I want to shift gears a little bit, kind of as we close, and just get super honest. Like, when it comes to sharing the gospel, like, do you get nervous? How do you not force it? All this kind of stuff. Because I think, you know, one thing that we're realizing here at the Palau team is people just want to be free. They don't, it can be helpful to learn the ABCs of the gospel, but there can still be that pressure, like, I need to share the gospel. It's an obligation. Rather, Jesus is inviting us into this, and it's a huge joy and privilege. So what are some pieces of advice you would give people who feel this pressure to share the gospel? Maybe they feel like it's forced. What kind of stories or just advice and or encouragement would you give to people maybe in that space?
Yeah, I don't consider myself an evangelist, even though I'm very passionate about evangelism. And so, yeah, I get nervous every time I strike up a spiritual conversation. And yet, the more I buy into what I'm saying, the more natural it is. And so for this woman that, you know, I shared with that had anxiety, like in stress, it was completely natural and it flowed with the conversation. And a lot of times nowadays I ask for permission. I share something like, hey, like there's this passage that really resonated with me and really changed how I thought about things. Can I share that with you? And so I think when I was sharing the, you know, the four spiritual laws and I've shared it, you know, hundreds, maybe even, you know, thousands of times, I felt like I had this agenda and that, you know, I knew that they knew that I had an agenda, you know?
And that makes you uncomfortable too, doesn't it?
Totally.
Yeah, you're like, oh, you know that I know that you know.
Exactly. And I think that agenda really keeps a lot of millennials from wanting to participate in evangelism.
I agree, yeah.
And because at the heart of that agenda is obligation. Is the sense of guilt of, oh, I need to share my faith in order to be a good Christian. But what if that obligation was, I want this person to thrive as a human being? So that's what I believe evangelism is kind of, I want to seek their thriving. I want them to experience the fullness of life. And if I believe that I have something that is able to help them to become more whole, why wouldn't I tell them? And here's the thing. Is that when people read my agenda now, they read that I want what's best for them.
That's such a change, isn't it?
Yeah. Their willingness to listen changes completely because they're like, oh, this person's for me. I may not agree with him, but he's for me. And it's not like he's trying to convert me or something. Like, that's not his agenda. His agenda is that he wants me to thrive as a human being. And so the more I, you know, like I've been on a long journey, the more that I begin to live out of that, the more it just becomes natural to have these conversations. So I will say that it's been a journey of moving from kind of that obligation and guilt towards I'm experiencing the gospel as good news. And because it's such good news, I want to tell people about it. And so it's becoming less and less, you know, anxiety driven. But those first few words of even asking somebody, hey, what's your spiritual background? Tell me your story. You know, like, what have you experienced in the area of spirituality? Even asking those first few words is always the hardest. And then after that, it seems to flow.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because as we talk to leaders, a lot of them, they go into a meeting expecting to talk about these agenda items and strategy and goals and next steps. And then they realize, wait, the person actually just wants relationship, you know? Uh-huh. And so many people just, like, I was listening to a sermon the other day, and the woman was saying, you know, so many people have never told their story, like their full story, because people don't sit down and just ask, tell me your story. Like, tell me about yourself. You know what I mean? And that just is an invitation, you know, to get to know the person and learn maybe what their longings are.
And some of the things that I'm realizing that millennials are longing for most is a sense of belonging. It's why they church hop and they're looking for belonging. And if they're not finding it, they're going to go to the next place. And we need to flip that consumeristic mindset on its head and say, hey, we as Christian millennials that want belonging, are we creating spaces of belonging for others? Mm-hmm. How do we learn what it means to belong to, first of all, this family called the kingdom of God, and then create that space of belonging for all sorts of people, whether they're Christian or not, whether they side with us politically, whether they, you know, look like us, all these things. We need to be able to create spaces of belonging for all sorts of people.
I love that. Okay, one final question. One thing I so appreciate about Crew is how Crew as a staff, they just normalize gospel conversations. One of our team members, Kaden House, worked with Crew when she was studying at college in Arizona, and she said for 2.5 years it was normal. We were starting gospel conversations with people just every week, you know. And I just so appreciate, you know, that's something that if you're desiring the flourishing in another person, you're going to be sharing the gospel regularly. How do you encourage leaders who, you know, want to create a culture of gospel conversations in their city? How do you encourage them to find or create a community around them that normalizes having regular gospel conversations? Because I think, you know, as we talk to people, we're like, we want fresh stories. We want to be people who have stories from a week ago, not the ones that we've repeated from 5 years ago, you know? So how do you create that community around you, even if it's just a few people, to just say, you know what? We have gospel conversations. It's normalized. We don't make it creepy. We don't make it awkward. We don't force it. But we're just creating this culture, and we want to share that with others.
Yeah. There's a lot of barriers to evangelism. I mean, it's scary. I mean, when you think about the idea of having an evangelistic conversation, you just want to shrink back. And so one of my favorite things to do is to take people out to go share their faith and just have spiritual conversations, to have, you know, to share the gospel. And almost every single time, their initial reaction when I bring it up is, I'm like, just, hey, just watch me. You know, that's fear. Like, associating with somebody that's sharing the gospel, like, it drives fear in your heart. But there are a lot of students that are saying, okay, yeah, I'll just watch you. And the same thing happens almost every time. They go, that wasn't so hard. I could do that. I'm like, well, let's see you do it then. And they go out and do it that same, you know, like I watch them do it. And so like, as leaders, I think we need to be able to model evangelism. And we don't even need to model, like, great evangelism. We don't have to be experts at evangelism, but we just need to model that we're having spiritual conversations, that we're listening to people, and that we can follow the flow of a conversation even if it's not the direction we want to take it. Yeah, I think that's kind of what I would encourage our leaders to do, is just to strike up conversations and then start modeling it for your staff, start modeling it for your congregation, and anyone that's involved with your organization. You just make that a regular practice. And you're right. That's one thing that Crew has done over the years, is they've taken a means and they've created a culture of initiating constantly. Every week, multiple times a week, they're initiating evangelistic conversations. And that's just a culture that I think, you can only build off of. You can learn through that. And so, yeah, mm-hmm. just initiating constantly.
Yeah. And I just love, you know, going back to, if evangelism really is seeking the thriving, the mm-hmm. flourishing of the other person by sharing what has caused flourishing in your life, which is Jesus.
Yeah.
Why not? Just share. Yeah. Just share. So, yeah. Josh, thank you so much for sharing a bit of just your life, your journey with us. If people want to get in touch with you, learn more, how can they reach out to you?
Yeah, you can email me at josh.chen@crew.org, or you can message me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Josh N. Chen. So, yeah, either way.
Awesome. Great. And if you're ever in the Portland area, you'll make sure, you know, everybody has to come and reach out to Josh and maybe go out on the streets and learn how he shares the gospel with other people.
That's right.
Awesome. Thanks, Josh.
Thank you.
Gosh, that conversation was so inspiring. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. To stay in touch with the latest content, just remember to subscribe. It's super easy. And also, keep the conversation going by DMing us on Instagram at City Gospel Movements.
Thank you for listening to the City Gospel Movements podcast, where we celebrate and accelerate collaborative gospel work in cities around the world. For more resources, show notes, and to get connected to gospel movements around the globe, visit citygospelmovements.org. That's citygospelmovements.org. Keep believing in what God can do in your city.